College Football Playoff Selection Committee put out its first rankings, and all eyes are on Tuscaloosa because that matters so much to Oregon and Utah. What is going on at USC? Do they have an athletic director or don't they? And how does Urban Meyer factor into that? Mike Leach might be leaving the Pac-12. What the hell is going on with Washington? Is Chris Peterson really that great of a coach? We're going to break down all the games as well. I'm George Reister with Ralph Amsden, and this is the Pac-12 Apostles. Ralph, all eyes are on Tuscaloosa this weekend. LSU travels to go to play Alabama. It's a totally different conference. You got a number two versus number three from the college football playoff, and the way it shakes out, it looks like the winner of that game greatly affects the Pac-12, because if LSU, who has a better schedule than Alabama, wins, then the path is clear for the Pac-12. But if Alabama wins, you know the conversation for two SEC teams is going to get real strong.
Well, I think that, I mean, that we go through this every single year. And then the hard part is you've seen LSU play and so have I. And I don't think that it's completely unfair to have that conversation based on, you know, what LSU brings to the table. But if you are part of any other conference, you have to be absolutely sick of that. I think that, you know, you must have been in your boy Mario Cristobal's ear, because this week he came out and advocated for the Pac-12's top teams to be treated as, you know, the SEC's top teams, you know, in the eyes of anybody. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a danger for an LSU team or an Alabama team to be taken over Oregon, even if they're not the conference champion. I think that, I mean, we've lived this. We know that that's true.
Yeah, Alabama wasn't the conference champion and then went on to go win the college football playoff. So the committee has to decide what is more important, because schedules have to matter. They have to. And that's why it's imperative that LSU wins, because Alabama's schedule is garbage. And any talk or any conversation of them getting in has to be gone. So right now, if you missed it, the college football power rankings look a lot like my college football top 10 as it should be. I gave you guys that earlier in the week, but here is the college. You guys can go look at that at unafraidshow.com. Comes out every Sunday morning. And you guys, this is the Pac-12 Apostles. Make sure you guys share the feed, like the feed, tell a friend about the Pac-12 Apostles. So the college football playoff rankings from the committee has Ohio State 1, same way I have it, LSU 2, and then they have Bama 3 and Penn State 4. Clemson 5, Georgia 6, Oregon 7, Utah 8, Oklahoma 9, Florida with two losses at number 10. And interestingly enough, they have Baylor, who's undefeated, at number 12, and Minnesota, who's undefeated at number 8. And the two changes that I would make into what the committee did is I would flip Alabama and Penn State, because Alabama has no quality wins. Penn State has beaten Iowa and Michigan, but they're still ranked ahead of them, confusing to me. And then Georgia, who lost to South Carolina, being ahead of Oregon, I'm not feeling that either.
Yeah, do you think the selection committee definitely takes into account the rankings? They have to, right? I mean, otherwise, why have Alabama as high as they have them? You know, maybe it's just reputation or whatever, but, you know, preseason rankings shouldn't be playing a role in something that happens 2 months down the road and is supposed to be independent from the rankings altogether.
See, it was very independent for Clemson. It was very independent for Clemson because Clemson hasn't played anybody, and they're sitting at number 5. But it's not quite as independent for Alabama, though.
Yeah. I see that, you know, talking about Mario Cristobal's comments, it was John Canzano that he talked with this week. I think he did a short podcast, and he said that, you know, they come in ranked number 7. He's got to address it with the team, because, you know, the old school idea of not paying attention to it in a world, it doesn't really work like that. He's out of your mind that you have to acknowledge it with the team. So if you're Mario Cristobal and you're telling your players, you know, and they look at what they've done and their body of work, they don't feel like they should be number seven. What do you tell the players to help keep their eye on the ball?
Oh, I tell them.
You just paint that like us against the world type thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm playing that up and I'm saying, look, we got to go out there and continue to earn the respect that we deserve. And you guys know what that means. That means we got to come out here. That means you got to play harder, play your assignments better, because that's how we've gotten there, is assignment football. We have been, and the truth be told, it is going to work out for us. If we handle our business, blow the doors off of people like we're supposed to, continue to be dominant, then we are going to, because Georgia's going to have to play the winner of LSU, Alabama. And Georgia might lose to Auburn as well. So don't worry about the SEC thing. And then also don't worry about the Big 10 thing. And Clemson is probably going undefeated. So you don't have to. So they're going to have a playoff spot locked up. Just handle your business. Handle your business and you will get in. That's what I would tell the team. Just focus on your one game. If you can focus on one game four times, you got Arizona, Arizona State, and Oregon State. Focus on those three games one time and then win the Pac-12 championship one time. You will be sitting in the top four. That's the same message I would have if I were Mario Cristobal or if I were Kyle Whittingham. The same exact message. Just do not get your head up. Do not listen to the noise. Don't drink the rat poison. Just go handle your business the way you don't get tripped up in the process and hurt your own self trying to worry about something else.
And they only travel one more time, right? And that's to come to Arizona State, which could be dangerous. Utah only travels one more time, and that's to come down to Arizona, and that should not be dangerous, but they do have a home game, you know, against UCLA that could be. And there are teams out there that are behind. There are teams out there that are behind Oregon and Utah that are hoping that they slip up so that they might be able to get back into the conversation. And, you know, Notre Dame is one of those teams. There's an article on NBC Sports that said that Notre Dame has a Pac-12 problem. That any hope whatsoever of them, you know, and it's a really outside shot of clawing their way back into the conversation, is going to take the Pac-12 finding some way to screw up in both the North and South divisions. I'm not sure that I see that happening, but you never know with this conference.
Oh, there's no path for Notre Dame. They're sitting at number 15 right now behind Michigan, Wisconsin, and they don't have a conference championship. And they're behind two-loss Florida and Auburn, too. Yeah, forget about it. Highest they can climb is about eight, like, if everybody screws up still. You know, they still lost to Georgia, and they lost to Michigan. Yeah, there's no way that they climb up too much higher. But that LSU-Alabama game is going to be critical for Utah and for Oregon. Handle your business and also get a little help from LSU, who should win the game as well. USC has a problem, Ralph. Everybody thought that Mike Bone, athletic director from Cincinnati, who used to be at Colorado, it was a done deal. It was a done deal. He was going to be USC's new athletic director. Might be announced even this weekend. Everybody was saying it's his first order of business going to be to fire Clay Helton. Who's he going to hire as new head coach? Arash Markazi. Everybody putting out that USC is going to do whatever they can, anything they need to hire Urban Meyer. But Carol Holt, the new president, apparently has kiboshed Urban Meyer, said he cannot be hired, and now Mike Bone might be backing out of the deal. This is so USC that it hurts, Ralph.
Yeah. I think what this report came from Inside USC, which is Scott Wolf. And I don't really know what to think of it because, first of all, Scott Wolf has been covering USC forever. He's got a bunch of sources. But at the same time, Scott Wolf's whole MO is that he's sort of an outsider for the current, you know, administration of coaches there at USC. He openly hates them. He's got, you know, he's got a very, very specific agenda, and that's to twist the knife anytime there's anything that could be embarrassing to the university in any way. And so when this story came out and it was Scott Wolf that was writing it, it was like, all right, well, it's either definitely accurate because he's been around the program a long time, or it's just another way of him trying to make USC look ridiculous, which is working because USC looks completely incompetent right now, that they might, you know, that they would talk with someone about taking a job, but they wouldn't understand what the non-starters are for that person. And that the most, you know, loudly whispered rumor in all of college football at USC was something that wasn't a possibility, but something that was great going into that initial conversation in the first place. So I'm definitely taking this report with a grain of salt, although it sounds very much like a USC thing, just because I know how adversarial Scott Wolf and USC's relationship is, which is just another USC thing, that they've got these reporters that are that are openly trying to chip away at the program, who probably believe that they're doing a good thing. But yeah, so I don't know. This is happening so loudly and so open and so out in the public, and it's not like Carol Holt can just come out and say, well, no, actually, I'd be fine with hiring Urban Meyer because they have a coach in place right now in Clay Helton. Having all these rumors about who you're going to bring in next as your head coach when you don't even have an AD in place, this is just nuts. Like, I cannot believe any of this is even allowed to go on, and there's nobody even to come out and give Clay Helton the vote of confidence. Not that I'm sure they would anyway, but you need somebody.
Who's going to give Clay Helton a vote? Dude, if USC gave Clay Helton a vote, of confidence, everybody would think it was ABS. Or they would say, hold up, we have crazy people around here. I mean, you can't fire a coach without an athletic director, because the athletic director has to hire the new coach. He's got to put an interim coach in place, because the whole reason why you hire an athletic director is to find coaches, is to make sure the programs are going in the right direction. So you can't have him inherit coaches, especially when those coaches nobody wants. When attendance is down, confidence is super low. Because I have two rules for firing a coach. Number one, at the end of every season, every coach needs to be reevaluated. Whether you went undefeated and won a national championship, or whether you went defeated and lost every single game. Every coach needs to be evaluated. And the first question that you need to ask is there a coach that I can guarantee get that is better than the coach that I have now? So, prime example. You have Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. Great coach. Nobody would complain. But if Oklahoma could get probably Nick Saban, would you fire Lincoln Riley? If Nick Saban was like, yo, I'm coming and I will sign a 10-year can't leave under any circumstances contract. Exactly. So that's the first rule. And then the second rule is there a loss of hope? Can this dude go into the homes of 17 to 19-year-old kids with these holdbacks and JUCO transfers and sell them on the fact that the future is brighter than the past? So in USC's situation, Ralph, how do you answer those two questions?
I mean, he's probably got to go. Why can't Carol Holt just fire him? Why can't they have a vacant, an open spot for an athletic director to just come in and fill? Why do they have to wait to make the firing? Because when I said vote of confidence, what I basically mean is to at least have somebody come out and say, like, hey, we're going to do whatever we do, we're going to do it at the end of the season. So everybody just shut up for a second.
Yeah, but then you get into a situation. I mean, it's just like Florida State. They fire Willie Taggart now. And you're sitting there saying, okay, but why? I mean, especially with the early signing period in college football now, in December, you fire a head coach, and now who the hell are you gonna hire besides somebody who is unemployed at this point in time? Like Bob Stoops.
Yeah.
And because they said they want the coaching search to be quick. So who the hell are you going to get? Because all of the teams that you may be able to poach from, like Penn State, maybe James Franklin, you might be able to poach maybe if you tried to offer Kyle Whittingham the job. I don't think he's up for it, but I'm just saying. If you were trying to offer Matt Rhule at Baylor the job, his team is undefeated. Do you think he's leaving in the middle of the season? Like, coaches right. See how this worked out for Willie Taggart.
I was about to name drop him. Yep.
Yeah, they're like, oh, maybe leaving in the middle of the season is a bad look because it doesn't buy you any goodwill anywhere.
Yeah. I will say this, that if this is truly what's going on right now, if USC is in open negotiations with Mike Bone and he's hesitating, you have to have a backup plan. And the moment that Mike Bone's like, well, I don't know, then he'd be like, all right, then enjoy your Skyline Chili, hang up the phone on him, pick up the phone, call your number two choice, and lock it in.
Yep. My dad always says, go be with the woman who loves you, not the woman who likes you. So Mike Bone does not love USC. He likes USC. Because he's saying, you know what? Maybe it's Urban Meyer or maybe it's death. Because if he's backing out, if he's waffling already on this thing, if Urban Meyer is the make or break, or some certain coaches are off limits, because if you're USC, I don't think you can afford to hire Urban Meyer. His checkered past, first of all, and USC's checkered past. They're still fighting to get Reggie Bush back on campus. They are under investigation for the basketball scandal. They can't handle anything else. Like, they can't bring in anybody but somebody squeaky clean right now, Ralph.
I'm going to give you an insane scenario, and you tell me just how off the reservation I am. Give the job to Clay Helton. Yeah. You don't want him coaching a football team, right? You don't want him coaching a football team. Everybody knows everybody loves him as a person. They just think that he's incompetent as a football coach. He knows he's been around USC. So, like, he's part of the culture.
No, that's the last thing they want. Never mind. Sorry. Let me let you finish this madness.
I get you. Right. They don't want somebody who is part of the family. But, I mean, what was he to USC before being an assistant coach? What if you moved him into an administrative role? Maybe you didn't even put him in charge of the football hire because he's too close to it. But, like, that way you can just get him out of that spot right now and begin a coaching search and use consultants or something. Because
so why put him in that role? You're trying to Lynn Swann the deal. They do not want another former athlete. They don't want another. They don't want anybody. How they say, who knows the fight song already? They want somebody who need to hand them the paper and be like, oh, yo, you got 48 hours to learn this because it matters. Mm. They don't want that, and I don't blame them. I wouldn't hire anybody with USC ties besides an uncle's cousin's niece who went there. That's it. It's a bad move. And
do you think there's anybody in the conference that they should try to poach as an athletic director? I mean,
Rob Mullins at Oregon. I mean, that's really about it, I think, right? Who else? Well,
God, this is. I know it's. You know, the Clay Helton thing's not a good idea. Well, I'm spitballing because it's just such a terrible situation to need for a coach, and to not have an AD, and then to not be able to get an AD, based on the coach that they would like the opportunity to try to hire. Meanwhile, like, you've got Clay Helton just sitting there in this lame duck position, knowing that he's going to get canned by whoever comes in next. Like, how awkward is that meeting going to be? Because unless the very first meeting that you have with the AD is them firing you, that first meeting is going to be complete bullshit.
Yeah, it is. Right. Oh, hey, how are you? How are things with the program? Yeah, I'm just waiting to fire you. I'm just letting you know.
Yeah.
Dude, they went like a whole year without a president. So you know, who couldn't then fire. So then they couldn't get rid of Lynn Swann, who they wanted to get rid of. Now Lynn Swann is gone, so they can't get rid of Clay Helton. USC recruiting, like we talked about a few shows ago, is way down, like number 64 in the nation. That's not going to work. That's not very USC-like. But also in the conference, you got Mike Leach. Rumors are circling around Mike Leach, maybe in consideration for the Florida State job. I hate this for Washington State, but love this for Florida State. I would love to see what Mike Leach could do with 4- and 5-star talent. I don't know if he can recruit Florida because he's a little brash and abrasive. I don't know if them Florida boys are a different breed if they're going to feel Mike Leach's style. But if he can recruit down there, imagine him being able to throw to, you know, having the Calvin Benjamins, the Asante Samuels kids, the, you know, all these big time athletes where he was playing with 2- and 3-stars at Washington State and him playing, running this offense with 4- and 5-stars. That would be sick. Or imagine him at USC. I mean, it's just like imagining him at USC with those wide receivers. That would be crazy.
I mean, I know what you mean when you say crazy. But I also will take the other connotation of the literal connotation of crazy as well. I mean, there would be some absolute insanity in either situation. Sometimes I think that Pullman's the perfect place for him because he can be himself. And for the most part, there's not really an issue, you know. I was laughing at the idea of him going down to Tallahassee and making fun of the homeless. Like, what is he going to do when he's out there, when he has the opportunity to say some dumb stuff and he's never been held accountable for it, you know, before, and then he does it in a major market like that, you know? When he makes fun of like the cuisine in Louisiana or just like whatever's, if he just says whatever's on his mind, you know, how's the SEC going to handle Mike Leach? I think that would be very, very interesting to watch. I don't love the idea of him at USC. I'm not sure that will change how their recruiting has been going. He's never really shown that he can recruit at a super high level. He mostly just, you know, his whole thing is about exploiting holes in defensive philosophy and things like that. The theory is he could do it better with more talented players. But, you know, can he get those players there in the first place? Because you would figure USC just recruits itself, but that hasn't been happening. So then there's this other part of me that thinks, like, you know what USC needs more than anything in the world is just like some real credibility with California kids. Like they need somebody that they see themselves in. They need somebody that they can relate to. They need somebody that understands where they come from. They need somebody who's not going to make fun of the litter and homeless problem on the streets, you know? Didn't just have 2 years experience as a position coach, you know, they need somebody like Antonio Pierce at USC, someone from the Inland Empire who will recruit the living hell out of California, you know? But I think it's probably too early for something like that. But yeah, I, I, I get the appeal of a Mike Leach. I just think that in Pullman, he can get away with being himself. Anywhere else, I'm not sure that's possible.
Yeah. I can see that. I can see why it would be much, much tougher for him to, for the act to play somewhere else. Like, does the act travel on the road? That would be the question, because there are only certain places that you can get away with that. Maybe he could at Kansas State too. It's got to be a very, very small town probably. Another coach, before we even get into the games, is Chris Peterson. So I troll message boards. I troll Reddit boards, message boards, Facebook groups of all the teams in the conference. And I am constantly reading comments, what fans have to say. And fans are, like, there's a lot of people who are showing a lot of discontent with Chris Peterson at Washington. I think Chris Peterson is a great coach. But here are some stats for you. Since he's been at Washington, he's 2-4 against Oregon, 2-4 against Stanford, 1-4 in bowl games. Zero times have they been ranked the highest Pac-12 team at the end of the season. Rutgers and Illinois are the only non-conference Power 5 teams that he's beaten. And he's lost 2 in a row to Cal. I was shocked when I saw this, because my perception of him and the results are in two separate stratospheres, Ralph.
That, to me, I was very surprised as well. And so ultimately the point you're getting at is that there are Washington fans who feel like they're being red-pilled on Chris Peterson and that they might be able to do better, right? That's the ultimate point here. And I still feel like I want to vehemently disagree.
Yeah, I do. I do. I do too. I don't know who they get that's for sure better.
Right. I mean, what them being competitive and in the mix every year right now, their best talent season being a year that they went 6-6. If I'm not mistaken, they had like 3 or 4 first round picks that year. Like, they have a reputation right now amongst recruits. They have it doesn't matter. None of that stuff matters to these kids. None of it.
Yeah.
They are recruiting like crazy all over the place. I still look at them as the team that went 0-12.
How?
Because they went 0-12. I'm never going to forget that. Never. Imagine anybody in the Pac-12 going 0-12. Like, I'm telling you right now, if Jonathan Smith turns Oregon State into a team that is in the top 25 for 5 or 6 straight years, and at the end of that 6th year, you go on message boards and people are like, yeah, but he's 2-4 against Stanford, but he has a hard time winning on the road in Arizona, but their best out of conference wins are Illinois, Rutgers or whatever. 5 or 6 years from now, I'm still going to be like, yeah, but they won like an average of 3 games a season over a 4-year span.
Yeah, like, but it's, see, still, expectations, though, are different at Oregon State than Washington, though.
But that's because of Washington Chris Peterson. Chris Peterson elevated those expectations. That's what I'm trying. That's all that I'm trying to point out, is that, like, you're expecting a guy to do better when he's the one that set the bar. So what gives you the right? What gives you the right to expect anything more from the person who raised your expectations? And that was the thing of Arizona State firing Todd Graham, right? Is, you know, Todd Graham went to 5 bowl games in 6 years when Dennis Erickson had like 1 winning season in his 5 years of the program. And then all of a sudden, you know, Ray Anderson, the athletic director, is like, we got to get, you know, more competitively consistent. We got to do better. And just my immediate thought was like, but he set that standard. He did. So what are you talking about? And yeah, here Arizona State is, you know, back to being semi-mediocre. The future's bright down here. But, like, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, you're going to victimize coaches for for building, for taking you part of the way. And I get that, right? It's a tale as old as time. It's biblical. You know, Moses' people wandered the desert and Moses never got to see the promised land. It was his brother that took him there, right? So that's a tale as old as time. Like, you have some people who can take you part of the way and then you have to have somebody else take you the rest of the way.
Correct.
I get that. But I don't know if that can happen at Washington, because in my mind, they are still that team that was just, you know, they obviously they had their era and then it went away. And now Chris Peterson is there and they're competitive in every game. They're consistently talented. They've got first round picks every single year. They're recruiting really, really well. They've played in a, you know, I can't make a better case than obviously these Reddit posts make a very compelling argument, but who's going to go in and do better?
I would totally agree. I think that they would be in a situation. Well, the person who would come in and take that job in a heartbeat came from the same place that Chris Peterson left. That's Brian Harsin at Boise State.
Oh man,
they would. I mean, think about who would take that. Either him, or you could probably poach Justin Wilcox from Cal.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he'd have to have some dynamic people underneath him. As far as a staff, I feel like he'd be very similar. He's got a little bit less personality, and I think part of why they recruit so well is he's just got a staff filled with people who kind of supplement his personality. But yeah, I mean that's very possible. That would be, and then what would Cal do? They just trade?
Yeah, right. That would be instead of firing coach, just trade him, to send the salaries, all of that. The last thing is a very serious thing going on in the Pac-12. John Wilner wrote an article. So everybody's been talking about Pac-12 expansion, and you know, about bringing in Boise State, other teams out of the Mountain West Conference, or the other conferences around. But truth be told, what's actually going on is you're looking at a situation to where the Pac-12 may actually be retracting, because these conferences only got bigger because of TV deals. The TV deals needed more inventory. They needed more games for the ACC network, Pac-12 network, SEC network, all of this. They needed more teams for them. So the conferences got bigger. So now, really, what they want to do is create better content. And really creating one super conference or two super conferences, almost like an NFL model. So imagine this, taking whoever they deem the top 30 teams. So you would probably, out of the SEC, you would get the five teams that are ranked right now. You would get Alabama, Auburn, Georgia, Florida, and Alabama. Oh, and wait, no, LSU. Well, Alabama, LSU, Florida, Georgia, and Auburn. That's who you would probably get out of there. Then out of the ACC, you would get Clemson, Florida State, Miami, and maybe one other team. Out of the Big 12, you could get, you know, Texas A&M, who's got more money than anybody, really, and who would buy their way in. And you would get Oklahoma, obviously. So it trickled all the way down to the other conferences, and people were saying, okay, who could get in this from the Pac-12? What teams would be move the needle enough that you would have 30 teams or so in one conference or two conferences that would play each other every single week? And they speculated in the article about that USC would get in. Obviously, they are the most storied team in the Pac-12. Who else could get in? Name brand team, big name team, basketball history, UCLA. And then from there, the most popular, one of the most popular teams in the country amongst recruits and all this stuff, you got Oregon. So they would probably get in as well. And then Washington could get in, and then the Pac-12 would retract down to eight teams. Or even if all those teams didn't get in, who do you think would be on the outside looking in, Ralph?
I don't know. This all sounds like Premier League sense to me. Or that, you know, Premier team would be defined as the amount of money that you get in your next apparel deal, like what your brand equity is. I don't know. Because the way that the Pac-12 is now, you know, Conference of Champions, right? you have schools that are sort of the cornerstone of this conference that if you're mostly just a football fan, you'd be confused about. Like Oregon State is one of the most influential schools in this conference as far as the president has, the power that the athlete has. And a lot of it's just the fact that, you know, they're women's basketball, baseball, basketball, other sports, they're very competitive in those things nationally. So would this be completely football driven, I guess, is my question. Because if that's the case, then, you know, it's going to be so they're definitely part of it. And, you know, if it's just sports in general, you know, then you have teams like Stanford who, you know, win championships in sports that I've never witnessed live. And, yes. Right. Yeah. And so I'm not sure. I think this whole concept is so foreign to me that I wouldn't really know what to say. This would be one of those things that I was resistant to just because I didn't understand it.
Things
like
that.
It could even be a better idea, but it leaves me in that, you know, Michael Scott from The Office position of saying, like, why don't you accept me like I'm five? Because I'm just not sure how necessary it is. I'm not sure how necessary conferences are ultimately going to be when everyone is going to have the ability to broadcast on their own. You know, if you take the income that comes at your school and you invest that in building your own broadcast department and you decide that you want to stream your games on Facebook the way that Hawaii does, what's to stop you from then just ultimately being independent and not having to share revenue with anybody?
Yeah, I think it'd be tough, man. I think that it would be tough to narrow it down, but obviously brand matters. And if you were to retract, would they retract just for football? Would they retract for whatever? Because there would be so much more money available for those teams if it were just those teams. I mean, that's...
Do you think there should be more of that? Do you think that there should be more of conference-specific, sports-specific affiliation? So, like, I'm in the Pac-12 for this sport, but I'm in the Mountain West for this sport. Do you think there should be more of that?
I think that would make things more competitive. For sure, but the confusion in it would get crazy, especially when it comes to generating revenue, who's in, who's out, you know, who makes the playoffs, who doesn't. I mean, you're getting a situation where conferences would then want to relegate teams who are not producing, who are not earners, because at the end of the day, you have to earn your keep in conferences. That's the entire point.
But you could do that. I mean, you could have, let's say you took the Mountain West and maybe brought the WAC back or something like that. Top WAC team moves into the West. Top Mountain West team moves into the Pac-12. And you drop bottom out of, you know, your 2-12 football team. And they have a year to go down to the Mountain West and see if they can claw their way back in. That would add some intrigue to it. But obviously then, you know, the amount of funding that those teams would be in dropping out of the bottom of the Pac-12 would never agree to it because it would affect the thing that matters most, which is the money that comes in.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I 100% agree with that. Now we can get into the games, Ralph. We can get into the games. So we have some very, very intriguing games this weekend. So we do have a game on ABC, a game on Fox Sports, and two games on Pac-12 Network. Only four games again this weekend. It is extremely interesting. The most interesting game of the week this weekend is the Washington Huskies at Oregon State. They have to travel to Salad Bowl Stadium, Research Stadium in Corvallis. Washington is reeling. They have lost back-to-back games. obviously they are the top 10 teams, Oregon and Utah, but they've fallen apart. They're sitting at 5-4. Confidence can't be very high. And Oregon State has been playing very, very well. They are second in the Pac-12 North. Unbelievably, they're sitting at 4-4. Maybe going to a bowl game. I can see a scenario where there is an upset here, Ralph.
I don't. But state your case. Maybe you can talk me into it. I currently do not see a path for Oregon State to beat Washington. I think that the, you know, the office is the big Wizard's head, you know, and the defense man behind the curtain. You know, I think that their success is a little bit of an illusion because I wonder why this is happening. Hold on. Let me close a couple windows and see if that's the case.
Ralph, you're breaking up too bad again.
Okay. I mean, you would have to state your case, George, because I don't see it. I think that, you know, it's like a Wizard of Oz type situation where, you know, the big giant head is the offense, you know, but the man behind the curtain is that defense that hasn't really been able to stop anybody. If you can get two or three stops in one half against Oregon State, you can build up a couple of touchdown lead. Then you can turn them into a one-dimensional offense, pin your ears back, and go after Jake Luton. There are just not enough teams in this conference that defensively have the ability to stop Oregon State. I think that Washington has that ability. So I don't see Oregon State as a threat to Washington. If they are, it's going to be an issue. Maybe I'll be jumping on Reddit and joining some of those posters being upset with Chris Peterson. But to me, this feels like a two-touchdown Washington win. I do not see a path for Oregon State to be upsetting Washington in this game.
Artavius Pierce rushed for 114 yards the last game. I would agree with you. I do think Washington wins this game. But I can see a scenario where their morale is down. Mind you, Washington has outscored opponents 103-13 in the first quarter. That includes Oregon and Utah. So I do agree that Washington can jump up, but they're playing on the road. They're 5-4. Morale is going to be naturally down a little bit because, remember, fans thought that this team could be a college football playoff team and was for sure going to win the conference with Jacob Eason. That has not materialized. And that means that players believe that as well. So when you start getting that sort of thing to happen, and then Oregon State's confidence is on max, they're looking at this like, hold up, we can make a bowl game. We have four games to play. We can make a bowl game. And we may be able to spoil somebody else's life. So you got Artavius Pierce, Jamar Jefferson, both went over 100 yards last game. We both know how we feel about Isaiah Hodgins, who even against Utah was having a good game. They just stopped throwing the ball, took him out of the game, all of that stuff. Because he had a good first half. They scored 56 points against Arizona, but Arizona's defense is horrible. Washington's secondary is extremely young. Their tackles haven't been playing all that great. You have Hamilcar Rashad, who's leading the conference in sacks, I think with 12 or 12 and a half.
So that's the dangerous thing. Jacob Eason likes to just continue to drop back instead of step up in the pocket.
Did you see Tech
do that?
Did you used to play Tecmo Bowl when you were younger?
Yes. Yeah.
You know he takes Tecmo Bowl drops where the quarterback just drops back forever and ever and ever and then can throw it as far as he wants to. That's what Jacob Eason does.
Or Madden 2004 Michael Vick drops because his throwing arm was a 99 and he could outrun everybody. You know, so you could just drop him back 20 yards to throw a 5-yard screen pass. You can't do that against Hamilcar Rashad. You cannot he's just a different level of athlete as a pass rusher. You can't do that. You have to be disciplined. You have to step up in the pocket. Don't get yourself hurt, because that's a backing up like that. Your momentum's already carrying you backwards. If somebody gets a hold of you, like, there's a reason Kevin Cobb's NFL career did not last, because he was a talented quarterback who, you know, he managed to get himself hurt a couple of times. That to me is the one big danger, is Jacob Eason putting himself in a position to not be able to finish the game because he doesn't trust the system that has been in place in football for as long as the forward pass has been there, that the pocket forms around you and you need to step up and make a play instead of trying to, you know, be a hero and do it all on your own. Other than that, I mean, maybe they don't even throw the ball at all. Just run the ball all over this Oregon State defense. And, you know, Oregon State's offense is really good, and you can't let them hang around. But this is still, you know, they have a common opponent, right, in Hawaii. I think that you draw from that and realize that what you did to beat the tar out of Hawaii, you can also employ to beat the tar out of Oregon State.
Yeah. This feels so weird to me. I mean, Washington, it's like the Pac-12 power rankings when we talked about this week, that we have to stop wanting teams to be good. Because I was looking at Ryan Leaf put out his Pac-12 top 12. He had Washington State 3, Washington 4. And I asked him straight up, I was like, how does this make sense? You have a team that's 1-4 in the conference and a team that's 2-4 in the conference at number 3 and number 4 in the Pac-12 power rankings. How is this even possible? He was like, you're probably right. I mean, because we want them to be better.
Yep.
We want them to be better than they are. So with that being said, this is the same case here. Oregon State's trending in the right direction. Trending in the right direction. Chris Peterson's team. Yes, they have a bunch of talented players. They are. They may get Puka Nuga back. Andre Bocelli has been doing a better job. You have, you know, some of their young guys are showing up. Not just you know, Aaron Fuller, who's a senior. They got Terrell Bynum, who's been showing up. The running backs have been nowhere to be found, really, the last couple weeks. But I just don't see it, Ralph. I just don't see dominance out of this team. Obviously, I think that they're well coached. They just, maybe this is a year where they're just short on talent. I don't know what else to say.
It's possible. I mean, they've graduated a lot of really, really good players, but they've been reloading, you know, and so it's time for some of those players to step up. I think what they're missing is, you know, a couple of game-breaking athletes. You know, next year we'll see how early Sam Adams Jr. is ready to make a contribution as a running back. You know, they need somebody who can kind of be a little more of a game breaker back there than what they've had. But yeah, I don't know. Then there's that whole thing of how teams play after. Now I'm talking myself into saying that Oregon State's going to be a threat, but teams the week after they play Utah tend to be a little beat up. So, you know, Oregon State's got that.
Yeah, and Washington, even though they had a bye week, they played Oregon, super physical game, off week. Then you come back and play Utah, and then those bruises that were starting to heal get re-bruised up, including the ego. So right now, people have the Pac-12 bowl games go into order: Rose Bowl, Alamo Bowl, Holiday, Red Box, Sun Bowl, Las Vegas Bowl, Cheez-It Bowl, and then an at-large bowl for a team who is 6-6. So provided, let's just say Oregon does not make the college football playoff, or Utah does not, then one of those two teams will go to the Rose, the other one will go to the Alamo Bowl. And a lot of people are picking Washington to win their last three games and end up in the Holiday Bowl. Do you think this is possible, or do you think that they will end up in the Red Box Bowl? Because people have UCLA picked to go to a bowl game. So,
I mean, yeah, Washington's at that point where, like, where if your only option is the Red Box Bowl, like, maybe you want to turn it down. Like, you don't want it messing with your overall brand and what your reputation is. But yeah, I think the Holiday Bowl is within reason. I think Washington fans would really dig that.
Yeah. Washington fans would not dig being in the Red Box Bowl. Oregon.
I mean, being able to go San Diego to the Holiday Bowl. They would not. I don't think they'd be happy to be playing. Isn't the Red Box Bowl?
That's in the Bay Area. That's the game that Oregon played in last year against Michigan State 7-6.
7-6.
That's very Red Box Bowl-ish. Yeah. They have USC in the Sun Bowl, Stanford in the Las Vegas Bowl, the Cheez-It Bowl with Arizona State, and then Washington State going at large. See, here is the problem with this I see. Remember when the guy put out the Pac-12 mock simulation with every team finishing 5-4 or 4-5 in the conference? That's where...
Yeah, that was me last year.
If you take out Oregon and Utah, that's where we're at right now. You have Oregon State, who's 4-4 and 2-3. Colorado, 3-6, 1-5, if they win a game. Cal, 4-4. Arizona, 4-5. Washington State, 4-4. Arizona State, 5-3. Stanford, 4-4. USC, 5-4. UCLA, 4-5. Washington, 5-4. Dude, you could have every team in the conference finish 6-6, basically, except for Utah and Oregon. That would be the most incredible thing ever, that the Pac-12 has 10 bowl eligible teams, all of them 6-6.
Yeah, that would not be incredible, because we'd be all complaining about how there's just like rampant mediocrity, and Larry Scott would be like, 10 bowls. Just like he did when nine teams made a bowl. And only one of them won a game, and he said, it's not whether you win or lose, it's like getting to the bowl that's the point. You know, that was like the worst spin of all time. But like, that would just give him another reason to celebrate. Yeah,
it's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. Okay. Let me know how that works out for you, buddy. Stanford goes to Colorado. Okay.
Colorado's already 1-0 this week.
Colorado. Yeah, go on, tell them.
They already got their win.
Go ahead
and
tell them, bro.
Antonio Alfano rivals number 5 player in the class of 2019, the number 1 defensive tackle in the nation out of New Jersey. He spent a couple of months at Alabama before deciding it wasn't the right fit for him. Mel Tucker managed to earn his commitment. He'll be enrolling in January, and all of a sudden, you have a 5-star defensive tackle who's going to be playing in Boulder. So what a huge surprise. What a giant recruiting win for Mel Tucker. You know, I think that they're already the fan base will excuse them losing to Stanford this week, because they already got about as big of a win as they could possibly have, which is 2 weeks in a row of pulling a really talented recruit. To Boulder, maybe something special.
Yeah, and then he got Brendan Rice to commit, and here's I've noticed this with recruits. They either go one of two directions. They either go to a team that is winning and being dominant and has a ton of momentum, or a team where they're like, hold up, this roster is super thin. I can get on the field ASAP, because I'm better than whoever they have there. And I think that's the Mel Tucker effect that's going on right now. Players see opportunity. They're like, listen, I think he's going to be a really good coach. I can go there and play right now, and dominate again while all the rest of these yahoos are going to, you know, Oregon, USC, wherever, and having to sit behind people and all deep on the depth chart.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where, like, you mean to tell me I could have an SEC coach without an SEC environment, like without all of the madness and all of the pressure? Sign me up. Like, I'll go play for Mel Tucker in Boulder, Colorado. Why not? And that's, I don't know. I'm not somebody who got a chance to see Alfano play at the high school level. I usually get to see most of these kids in action at different rivals camps all over the country. But you know, this is somebody who the staff believed in enough to jump up 17 spots in their last rankings that they did for the 2019 class. He was somebody that was ranked in the mid 20s, and they bumped him all the way up to the number 5 recruit in the whole country, number 1 defensive tackle. And so somebody believes in him. Somebody believes that he's got a ton of talent. And you know, I think that 24/7 might have had him as the number 1 recruit in the whole country, regardless of position. So this is huge. Like, make no mistake, this is enormous for Colorado. Maybe that gives them a little juice going into this weekend. What do you think?
I guess it might, but this is a team that everybody has as the worst team in the Pac-12 right now. They are spiraling in the wrong direction in terms of.
Did you see somebody tweeted that in the last 3 years after their Arizona State game, they're a total of 0-14?
Oh, yeah, dude. Okay.
They have yet to win after playing Arizona State the last 3 years.
Think about this. They are 0. They went 0-7 after starting 5-0 last year. This year, they may lose 8 straight games. 8 straight games. We thought the 0-7 was bad last year. They may lose 8 straight games this year. That would be atrocious in scoring defense. The only team worse than them is Arizona right now. They're giving up 34.5 points a game. Their rush defense they're giving up 164 yards a game. Their total defense, second worst in the conference, only by 1 yard is Arizona worse. This is not a football team. It's weird because in a lot of the stat categories, aside from pass defense, which they're dead last, they are this Colorado team is really just like they are middle of the road. They're middle of the road passing the ball, middle of the road kind of in some defensive categories, total offense. They're a middling team. But they are, when you add up the sum total of all that middle and a couple bottoms, it puts them dead last. And I'm wondering if it's effort. They don't know how to win. And I think that Mel Tucker has to get new guys in because these guys, even though that yes, they have some talent at positions, truth be told, they're just not as competitive. In terms of the whole team, you add them all up, they're not as competitive as you need a team to be.
Yeah, and part of it, I think, is they were recruiting well in certain pockets. Like, they'd get, like, 4 or 5 really good players from Texas in the Mike McIntyre era, and then try to fill in the rest with just, you know, some 2-3-star talent from around Colorado, maybe California or Nevada or whatever. You know, they weren't even recruiting Arizona all that much, and it's right there. Like, they, you know, they would get like they would get a couple of really good pieces, but offensive and defensive line was a struggle for them. You know, they landed a couple of decent tight ends, but they still haven't used the tight end in years for some reason. So I don't know. I think that they were trying to build from the outside in, get some talented skill position players, and then everything else will. You know, we'll come along, but that's not football, and it never will be. You know, until we have 7-on-7 replace football completely, you're going to need people on the offensive and defensive line to anchor what it is you're trying to do. And I think Mel Tucker knows that, and I think that they're going about this a little bit different. And they got a huge piece to the puzzle in Antonio Alfano. But yeah, are they equipped to beat Stanford if Stanford is healthy at the quarterback position? No. Right.
Yes. Stanford has been to 10 straight bowl games. You could actually pencil David Shaw in for 9 wins a season. He's not going to get to 9. Well, he might get to 9 win if he wins out this year, but he's got at Colorado, at Washington State, Notre Dame, Cal, and then Notre Dame to finish the season. So I'm sitting there like, okay, like what does this mean for, like, is there any way that Stanford misses a bowl game with that schedule left?
I don't know, but I don't know if this team deserves to go to have fun in Vegas. I don't know if they deserve that reward. I mean, they'll probably get the same amount of fans.
Okay. Yeah. Will Cameron Scarlett go for over 100 yards in this game?
Yes. Barely. Okay. Barely.
Okay. Okay. Oh, we didn't even clarify. Who are you picking in the Washington-Oregon State game?
Oh, Washington, by at least 2 touchdown win.
Oh God, I'm picking the Beavers with an upset.
Oh, dang. Okay.
Yeah.
You're gonna look like a genius if it happens.
Yeah, I think that Washington is the better team, but they're headed in the wrong direction right now, and I think this has trap game written all over it. Okay, who are you picking? Stanford, Colorado.
I'm picking Stanford. I think that picking Colorado for the rest of the season it would be a sign of mental illness. Like, they just haven't stopped anybody. I don't think they're going to start now. And even when you get good Montez, they're losing. Like, I love good Montez. Like, he puts up NFL numbers within an NFL body. But, you know, then you get games like last week where he just, ugh. So, I don't think there's any way Stanford loses this game. So I'm going with the Cardinal.
I totally agree with you. I can't see a situation aside from injury to KJ Costello, which could happen, that they lose this game. So I want Mel Tucker to do well. I think it's good for the conference when there is, you know, when the teams are respected, even if they're losing. Next game up, I guess you can call this the tarmac game, because USC. So the last time USC had a coach who got fired, Lane Kiffin, it was, well, actually no, because Sark got fired in between.
But Sark was drunk at the Arizona State game, so that.
Oh,
that contributed.
That's very true. So Arizona State has been the straw that broke the camel's back for the last three USC coaches, including Lane Kiffin, who got fired on the tarmac, who didn't even get to ride the team bus back home. So what do you do? I mean, USC clearly has a talented roster. They're headed. They don't know who the AD is going to be. There is so much. I don't even know how you play in this environment, because Clay Helton's clearly, because he's a try hard guy. He's not going to quit. He's a fighter. You got to give him that. But how much fight can his team have left after the clubbing Oregon put on him, after all the rumors about Clay Helton's job? I mean, how do you function in this? It's toxic.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I know that Arizona State is relishing the opportunity to free USC from their burden another time. I don't know if it happens like that, because it's one of those things where, if you're going to fire him without an AD in place, why would you not have just already done it? But it's possible. I mean, that second half against Oregon, that's not what you want to see. If you're a USC fan, ever, right? And if that happens against Oregon State, or if that happens against Arizona State, I apologize. And it happens back to back weeks. I mean, I think you have to make a move, because you risk the players just sort of outright quitting. You risk decommitments from the players that are already, you know, even though there's not a lot of players that have committed to them that have a ton of other options, because that's how far USC has fallen in the recruiting game, at least in the last, you know, 12 to 14 months. Would you fire if Arizona State wins this game by double digits? Would you fire him regardless of your athletic department situation?
Who can fire him is the question.
Right? What a weird bird.
Like who actually has the power to fire him?
Yeah, I think they're screwed. They're screwed, right? So if they lose this game, you have December signing days coming up in like what, 4 weeks? You're not going to be able to salvage that. So you have to like eat a messed up early signing day for the 2020 class.
And pickings are slim. You might as well just keep him on. Pickings are slim. Yeah. After the early signing day, like aside from a couple big name kids, I mean, USC didn't sign a 5-star last year for the first time in forever. And then they got Brew McCoy to transfer in. So I guess that salvaged that. But this year, they're not looking like they're going to be able to sign any 5-stars. But Arizona State on the other end, I talked about it in the Pac-12 power rankings on Unafraid Joe, that they look like a team that hit the rookie wall, the college version of the rookie wall. So in the pros, the rookie wall is when young players, particularly rookies who haven't played as many games, because think about it, you only play 12 games in college. You have 2 bye weeks usually throughout the season. NFL, there is 4 preseason games, 12 games, and you get 1 bye week. So by the time you've played 8 games in the NFL, you have already played an entire college season, and you still got 8 more games to go, plus potentially playoffs. So that's where rookies usually hit the wall. And Arizona State hit that wall because they're playing a ton of freshmen. And now, after a week off, I think Herm is going to have those guys refreshed. Their minds are going to be better. And this is going to be a dangerous game. This is a timing thing for USC, and timing is not good.
Maybe. I mean, it's an intriguing game. I'll give you that. The one thing that Arizona State struggles with is accurate quarterbacks. You know, I'm probably not going to find a more accurate passer than Keaton Slovis.
What happened to those DBs you were talking about, Ralph?
Well, the defensive line happened to them. You can cover someone for 6 seconds, but you get to second number 7. What are you going to do? And I think that's the burden of any defensive back anywhere. You know, the defensive line just isn't getting a ton of pressure. They've feasted on quarterbacks who aren't necessarily known for their accuracy, but then look what Dorian Thompson Robinson did against him. He's not an accurate quarterback, but he had all day. He had all day, and all of a sudden he looks like an NFL prospect. So, you know, they're missing the one key element to make their defense truly good, which is the ability to get to the quarterback. They haven't really been blitzing their linebackers as much or as effectively as they did last year with Merlin Robertson. And, you know, he's kind of had a lull, like a sophomore slump a little bit. Here's what's interesting for me about this game, besides just the history of USC coaches getting fired after, you know, their encounters with Arizona State, is USC traditionally comes into Sun Devil Stadium and beats the hell out of ASU. And they get it done early, like first half blowout, and then, you know, just coast the rest of the game. ASU's done most of their damage against USC recently at the Coliseum. The quarterback battle is very intriguing because Jaden Daniels, I think that if he thought, and, you know, I'm sure that there are people that will think I'm speaking out of turn on this, but trust me, I'm not. If Jaden Daniels thought that USC would have given him a fair shot as a quarterback, I think that he would have seriously considered USC. Seriously considered USC. Keaton Slovis is from 15 miles from Arizona State University, and ASU went out to see him twice and didn't offer him. USC did. So now you have 2 true freshmen going against each other that could have very easily been wearing the opposite uniforms, but are not. So I think that's intriguing for this. You have obviously the most talented receiving core in maybe all of college football going up against two three-year starters at defensive back and a third defensive back who was a former USC Trojan in Jack Jones. I think that that's incredibly intriguing. You have a team in USC that doesn't really run the ball versus a team that like has to run the ball to survive. It's Eno Benjamin, one of his last opportunities to play in front of the home crowd, because I'm 100% positive that he doesn't want to take the same beating that he got this year next year. So he's probably going to be moving on. And then, you got Clay Helton's not even coaching for his job. He's just sort of in a lame duck position versus, versus Herm Edwards, who doesn't want to be sitting at 5-5 with a losing record in conference, in the middle of his second season after all of that juice that came from, HBO and the hot start to begin the season. I think that this is an incredibly intriguing game. I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am interested in this game as well. On one hand, USC is the more talented team.
Yes.
I am confused about how I feel about Keaton Slovis at this point. He threw the ball 57 times against Oregon, which is, if you have the confidence to throw the ball 57 times, mind you, 40 of them were in the first half, then okay. Then you can be a guy.
That's the first time they looked like an air raid team. And they still didn't look like an air raid team. But that was the first time that you saw a little bit of that Graham Harrell stuff really come into play.
Yeah, it was, but it wasn't very effective. Oregon is a top 10. I know that Oregon is a top 10 team. But at the end of the day, though, when you pass for what, under like 9 yards, 9 yards per reception, and you throw, and the three interceptions were just bad. One of them went off a guy's hands off of kind of an errant throw. And then the one to Brady Breeze was just, that was a gimme. Like, he just could have walked in the end zone after.
Yeah.
And yeah, they just weren't very pretty at all. So you're looking at him, he had a 4.6 average per reception. Yeah, per reception. Yeah, that means that it's even lower per attempt. So
he's a freshman. He's a freshman. Like, that's what people got to remember.
Are you sold on him? Are you sold on him?
Yeah, I am. Because not only is he a freshman, and I want to remind you, he played against one defense in all of high school, one defense that had Division I players on it. One. So he played against Keely Ringo.
Sounds like Panay Sewell.
Exactly. And then look what he's doing as a freshman in the Pac-12. Like, there are flashes from him where you say, like, oh my God, this is really a guy. And how many people can you say that about as a freshman? At quarterback, that's really, really tough. Most of the time, you need a couple of years to get into the mix. And I know that quarterbacks this day and age are just different because they got private training for, who knows how long. But you still, it's still different when you're having to read a college defense and when you got guys like Leckie Fotu, crushing you in the backfield and stuff like that. I do have confidence in Keaton Slovis. I think that he has proven already that he is a legitimate threat at the quarterback position. Is he going to be the best quarterback on campus? I think next year we'll see. We'll see, how they go about, organizing that competition and all that. But, I think that at the end of this game, at the end of this USC-ASU game, I think it'll be fair to start making judgments on who has the better future, him or Jaden Daniels. Because it just came out that Jaden Daniels has had to scramble more than any quarterback in all of college football. He's taken off running 65 times this year.
If he doesn't take off 65 times, they don't win. That's just the truth. They might be defeated right now if he doesn't take off running that much. The last game up in the Pac-12 this week.
Well, who are you picking?
Lord, I'm picking. This is so tough. I think USC has one last stand for Clay Helton, I think.
Okay, I'm with you. I'm with you.
Yeah, yeah, because the last few games from Arizona State have given me zero confidence. I know they're coming off a bye, but I have zero confidence from what I've seen the last few weeks.
It'd be impressive if they won.
Yes.
Even with all the distractions, they'd be bowl eligible. It would be the second time in 2 years. It would be very, very helpful for ASU trying to finish out their recruiting class, which is almost full anyway, especially with the, you know, trying to get an advantage in California with all that uncertainty that's going on with USC for the 2021 class. This game is so important to ASU, but I just don't know if they have what it takes. USC's roster is, outside of Keaton Slovis, USC's entire roster is literally players who had ASU as their safety school. USC's entire roster is like Lori Loughlin's daughters.
That's funny.
Every single one of them. It's true, though. It's true. Almost every USC player is like, man, if I can't get into USC, if there's not room for me in this recruiting class, I'm going to go have a kick-ass time for 5 years at ASU. Like that, and that's been true for like a decade, and ASU fans are getting absolutely sick to death of it. Like Drake Jackson is probably one of the best young defensive linemen in the country, and he wanted to go to ASU. You know, he just wanted to go to ASU, and his dad was like, it's all about USC. Like, that's where you need to be. And he, at the last minute, he decided to make his dad proud, and now he's out killing it for USC. And ASU fans are just, they're sick to death of, you know, and then you get the players that couldn't academically qualify or whatever at USC that end up as ASU Sun Devils, like the Vontaze Burfict and stuff like that. The ASU will, you know, well, maybe not Vontaze, but ASU is always thankful when they get that opportunity. But yeah, it's always been sort of the dynamic between ASU and USC is that USC is full of players who would have ended up at Arizona State if there wasn't room for them in the recruiting class. Isaiah Polamau is one of them, you know, it's one of those things where ASU is sick of being the little brother and they need this win, but I'm just not sure they match up very well.
Yeah. I totally agree with you there. The last game up on the Pac-12 slate is the Washington State Cougs, who may be out of a head coach soon, and Cal, who has a quarterback problem still. But I did hear through the grapevine that Cal had a come to Jesus meeting with their defense because they didn't feel like that they performed very well against Utah in terms of toughness and the mentality that they love to show. So I think the Cal defense against Washington State puts up a much better performance, much better. They are going to slow Washington State down. They're going to slow this air raid down. Anthony Gordon is going to be looking like he's stuck in mud. This is going to be a smothering defensive performance. But Washington State's still going to win huge.
Is it? I was waiting for that, but.
But Washington State is still going to win. They may win 19-0, 19-7.
Is Monster back?
I believe he is back. I know Garbers is still out for a little bit. Garbers might make it back for the last two games against Stanford and UCLA. Maybe.
Okay. I don't think they'll get shot. I do think that we saw positive strides from Monster. I think we saw the game slow down for him a little bit, and I don't trust Washington State's defense to shut out anybody. I do like Washington State in this game. I'm super intrigued by it because this is, you know, this is a great offensive scheme against, you know, players that you've been praising all year long as being, you know, some of the most talented defensive backs out there. So, you know, and we watched what Anthony Gordon did against Arizona State. You and I had a huge argument about that. You know, we watched what Washington State did against Oregon. That, you know, they're going to get theirs, and if they don't, then the debate will be settled, right? If Washington State doesn't go out and throw for 400 yards
against Cal, then it's debate over. We know who the best defensive backs, we know who the best defensive backs coach, we know who the best defensive coordinator, we know all that, right? So this is probably the game that I'm most intrigued in, just because it's going to settle the most of our talking points and debate points from throughout the year. But yeah, there's no way Cal gets shut out. You know, they even defensively, maybe they score a touchdown or two, but I do like Washington State in just their sort of offensive relentlessness to kind of get it done and maybe pull away in the fourth quarter.
Cal just can't score enough points to win this game. Like, there's just not a scenario where they can score enough points to win this game. It's unfortunate, but these are the realities of the situation. They just don't have enough firepower offensively. And yes, Washington State's defense is leaky, but they're not leaky in, I mean, they are leaky in the pass defense, I guess, which they can't do. And in their run defense, they are, oh, well, their rush defense is last in the conference, 193 yards a game. So I guess Cal, if they can get something going on the ground, but if you're Washington State, you sell out to stop the run. You sell out to stop the run and double dog dare them to throw it over your head. That's where you're at right now.
And I think Cal's in kind of a cool position where, like, most college football teams are, you know, you got to win now, you got to win now, you got to win now. I think that Cal fans and the administration understand that they're building something and that they have a huge infusion of offensive talent coming in this next recruiting class. Their current recruiting class that are all freshmen there right now have some talent. And I think that the high expectations have to be put on them for next year. This is just sort of a preview of, like, this is troubleshooting. 2019 is a troubleshooting year for Cal to go out there, figure what's wrong, and make sure that it's all in place to make a run next year.
Well, they would have made a bowl game this year had Garbers not gotten hurt. They were 4-0. I refuse to believe that they would not have won two more games had Garbers not been hurt.
Yeah, you just never want to be completely, you know, they want to be USC. They want to be able to lose a quarterback and still be able to win, you know, three or four games with your backup, even win a game with your third string if you need to, and they're just not at that level yet, but they're recruiting their way into it.
I would agree with that. So who are you picking in this game?
I'm Washington State winning late. It'd be cool to see Cal get a win. I mean, I'm not rooting against Washington State or anything like that.
Just forget about it. There's no chance they win. Washington State could score 14 points and win this game. That's how bad Cal's offense is. So this is not going to be a shootout unless they double dog their Cal to throw it over the top and they get some, you know, some big touchdown passes or something. Yeah, that's the only chance. So sorry.
Even though Arizona State dropped in the mid 30s against Washington State, you really don't.
Arizona State has Jaden Daniels at quarterback who can run and throw. Nuke went crazy that game. Broke tackles. They don't have that at Cal. They don't have a no Benjamin. Christopher's a good back. Christopher Brown, good back, but he's not a no Benjamin. You have to compare apples to apples, Ralph. You're comparing, you know, plums to watermelon.
Okay, so but even at. But 14 points. So now that's what I'm watching for. I'm going to see if this offense can score more than 14.
If they can score more than 14 points against Washington State, Washington State is the worst defense in the Pac-12. Even worse than Colorado's. So that's the truth. You guys, thank you guys for joining us for the Pac-12 Apostles. We appreciate your time, appreciate your energy. You guys, make sure you guys share the feed, tell a friend about the Pac-12 Apostles, and you guys send us an email if you want to. I'm mad@unafraidshow.com, and we will see if we can get Ralph to finally pull the projections and the standings back together, because I think he's avoiding them for a reason.
You know, I think we're both in pretty good position. I don't like to think back. I just like to be hopeful for the future.
Yeah, exactly. Because he knows I'm spiking the football super hard.
That is the big difference between us. Yeah, that is you will. If I go 6-0 and you go 0-6, I'll be like, oh, you'll get him next time, George. If you go 4-3 and I go 3-4, you're like, you're terrible.
Yes, bro. I am Spike the football guy. It is in my DNA. I cannot help it. You guys, peace out. Catch you guys later.